The topic that I am going to share on today is about coaching, about the role of coaching for the church planter, and you'll find it in your binder. And we will look at the very issue of coming alongside the church planter to see if we can help him or her succeed in the dream that that person has in them. But before I start, I'll just tell you a little bit about myself and our story. When I was done with my studies in the United States in 2000, I was asked to come home and be a youth pastor in the church I grew up in. I left that church 5-6 years earlier. It's a traditional Pentecostal church, and I said to the pastor that you're taking a chance hiring me because I am really a church planter. And he was on his way towards retirement, and he said that, well, we'll sort it out. And I thought, we won't sort it out. But he said, we'll sort it out. So 3.5 years into it, we really started, you know, it's time for church planting. And he said, we need to sort this thing out because you're taking over this church. So during about a year of work together with me and the elders, they were really gracious and said that we have asked so many ministry gifts to follow our path for them. Let's let this guy do what he feels that he's going to do. My rationale and my arguments for doing this was to follow my calling, but it was also the missional task of how can a Pentecostal church that has been in a city for 80 years and in many ways has its group, has its followers, the people that know that they're in it and the people that know that they're never going to it. How can we plant new churches in order to bridge into those secular, late modern Norwegians? Church planting was the way that we wanted to do it, and they were very gracious, my pastor and the elders, leaving me. One of the reasons why I wanted to plant instead of taking over was that I've seen so many that have struggled so much. I was at the time 29 years old, and I said to some key people in church that, you know, if I do this, there is a 70% chance of your church winning and 30% chance of me winning this cultural battle. I'm not that great of a leader, and I will accommodate too much, and this will just be a challenge. So I'm so grateful, 9 years into it, that I did it. I'm so glad that I was able to plant. But when I said I want to plant, I was out of support system. I was on my own. There is no church planting training in our denomination. There was no class to go to. There was no money to ask for. And obviously, I had some contacts. Obviously, I came out of a ministry sphere where I knew where to get my things. But I needed to be the one responsible to find overseers. I needed to go to the right conferences. I needed to find the support system to succeed. Now, my experience is this, 9 years into it, that the people that started at the same time as I did, half of them in the Pentecostal movement failed. They closed their churches, didn't make it. So if we're going to make more people succeed in church planting, I believe a lot of it is about the support system that we're able to build around. And I say this to our denominational leaders. I say this to pastors of traditional churches. I say this to the churches of cities where churches are being planted. It is not just up to the church planter, him or herself. It is up to the support system to get alongside them and help them succeed in what they're doing. One of the main challenges in Western culture right now is independence. We fight dependence towards independence. The sole freedom of a human being in this part of the world is to be the architect of one's own success. And of course, that creates a lot of people that have success story, but it also creates a lot of people that have stories of loss. Because if everything in life is about succeeding in your own life, then all those people that can't make it, what happens to them? So sociologically, in our country alone, we have huge challenges on depression, on health, on people falling outside of the work market, people falling out of their track in life. This is one of the dark sides of individualism. And I call the church to say this: let's get alongside those who are called. Let's get alongside those that need support system. And I believe coaching is one of those vital things in making that happen. Coach comes from the word coaching, coach, which is the wagon that takes you from somewhere to another place. Coaching has been around in the business world and now in the church world for the last about 20 years. And it was Whitmore that wrote this great book in the beginning. And that book has kind of become the Bible of coaching. And now you have coaching for almost everything in the world. Coaching is beautiful, but coaching is also very, very dangerous. My wife's boss will never send anyone for coaching. He says that when they come home from a coaching seminar, they either want to travel the world, divorce their wife, or do something else and quit their job. Because if coaching is just throwing a hand grenade into people's life and ask them to dream big, lots of different things come in. Coaching is about also making a framework to get people from where they are to where they need to go. That's why church planting coaching needs to be developed as a own subject. We need to work with a framework on how does this work. And I'm no specialist in this. I learned a lot from different sources, as you can see in my bibliography. But I have learned a lot from Timothy Keller's work in Manhattan. Thompson has written a manual on this. And those are really good at church planting. Obviously, they quote also the Vineyard Churches of North America and different leadership lessons, leadership things that have been written over the last few years. And you'll recognize some of that. My personal training in coaching was done in with Life Forming Leadership Coaching out of Regent University in Virginia. My former teacher and professor and mentor and friend, Dr. Umidi, developed Life Forming Teaching Coaching. It's the world's largest Christian coaching work. He spent a lot of time on developing the value base and the theological basis for coaching. There's a huge debate in evangelical circles, and Regent University has been very good at working on theologically sound coaching, because some of it is psychobabble, some of it is really without framework. So when I talk about coaching today, I talk about it with some coach training, and I talk about it with church planting experience. And I'm talking with you about this on the verge of helping other church planters succeed in their travels. Is that okay? That is the framework of what we're talking about. Now, my first point is this. What about the mission context and what about the mission content? In many ways, coaching works best when it is in a relationship that enables learning in a specific context. I planted a church in the second largest city in our country with 30,000 students, 3% church attendance, which is lower than it was 10 years ago. I need to make sure that I understand that I'm working with, we don't have classes in Norway, we never had, but if for those of you that come from those kind of contexts, like middle class, educated group, young professionals, that is my group. I work with that group. If you work in an inner city, poor environment in a major city on the face of the planet, that changes the context. But that also changes the way coaching ought to be done. If you work with former drug addicts, if you work with business people, we need to understand that as we coach people, that the context informs us on how to do the job. In many ways, we need in our home missions department to be as eager of cross-cultural thinking as they need to be when they go to Congo. But this is a new thing for most generations plus a certain age, I'm not gonna say which, but we live in countries with subcultures. In Norway, we are a small country, 5 million people. When I said that in Delhi last November, they laughed. They said, you are the size of a bus stop in Delhi. And you even have a king and a queen. Because we're small, but we have many subcultures. And I say to Pentecostal preachers when we talk about preaching, I say that, yes, we are going to hear God, but we also need to hear the people. Because it's not enough just to get a word. You need to get that word and deliver it so that people understand it. Coaching is about feeding off the context. We need to feed off the context that we are in. And as we're placed in the context, it helps us to understand better what we're doing. You know your country the best. You know your group the best. These are the three elements of content. The gospel of Jesus Christ in a revivalistic church planting environment tends to be focused mostly on the people that are coming to Christ. We've had to say at home that, you know, let's not just reserve the gospel for those who are being converted. Let's ourselves in our lives also live gospel-minded lives. Because the gospel is also for our holiness. It's also for our life change. It's for our repentance. It is also for us to receive grace. And both the coachee, which is the person that we coach, and the coach both needs to be under the gospel in their relationship. Because that deepens the relationship between them during the task of bringing the coachee from where he is to where he is going. The gospel is one of the most important, of course, underlying factors for the relationship. So in Whitmore's language, anyone can coach anyone. So if you're a great golfer, then you can go and help someone build a business. I mean, in the illusion and ideal of coaching, that's possible. I tend to differ in my thoughts about this because it's very hard for a golfer to train a church planter in Kosovo. The gospel needs to be there. The gospel needs to be one of those bottom line agreements for them. The context. Jesus wept over Jerusalem. And in many ways, I've seen church planters that have come out of Bible school as schools as great teachers. They come out of parachurch ministries and they get into church planting. It's an impossibility to be a professional on a stage somewhere and then go into church planting and think you'll succeed. Before you cry over the very context you're going to reach, before you learn the names of the streets and the names of the people, and you exegete the very heart and pains and struggles of the people you're going to reach, it's going to be very difficult. It's very hard to coach someone if there is no context. Then it becomes theoretical and high-flying and not concrete. The context needs to become a vital part to kind of make it, put it in connection with real life. Leadership. Let me quote Timothy Keller. He says this. He says that leadership is mobilizing God's gifts to get God's goals in God's way. Mobilizing God's gifts to get God's goals in God's way. When we move the church planter from where he is today to where he is going to be with his dream, we develop leadership. We develop it in the context of the very place of ministry, and it is all filled with the gospel of Jesus Christ. The definition, therefore, of church planting coaching, as you see on page 2, is that church planter coaching is developing a supportive relationship with the coachee that leads to continual gospel renewal and character deepening that focuses on the realities of urban life. I put a slash in there and says the specific context. And that results in the improvement of skills and performance by a form of instruction that enables the coachee to build awareness and responsibility. That is brilliant. We can't unwrap all of that in this talk today. But this definition of church planting context kind of summarizes some of those borders, some of those awarenesses that needs to be around that relationship. Before we continue, I want to say a little bit about the limits of coaching. Tom Nebel with the Converge International. He says that within Converge International, that is the old Baptist church planting network in America, they are quite successful with what they're doing. He would say that in church planting success stories, they brought their success stories to 65% success rate when they introduced assessments a number of years ago. When they added coaching, they lifted it to 75% success rate. So coaching lifted it, but it only lifted it 10%. Their recent finding is the risk analysis. And if you haven't looked into that, that's not going to be part of my talk today. But the risk analysis has lifted their success rate up to 85%. The risk analysis is basically this, that they ask some questions about what kind of environment suits you best as a church planter. Do you know the culture? Do you know do you know some adult people there? Do you have family there? Do you have some connections from before? So many things in church planting is about getting life to work. We find it with the people we work with church that we say, the people that can handle their calendar, the people that can make sure that they have a babysitter, the people that can do a lot of things with some kind of heart rate that is not on a heart attack level, those people have longevity and they will succeed. And the risk analysis looks into some of those. It's not complex. It's actually very simple, but it's a brilliant tool that has helped them. And I just want to say that, to put this in a context, that coaching is a little bit of this, but it is an essential bit of it. But it is not everything as we move along. Number two, what is the heart of coaching? As I mentioned, coaching has in many ways brought with it some difficulties also. You know, a few hundred years ago, anyone could be a medical doctor, anyone could be a psychologist. A number of years ago, anyone could be a family therapist, anyone, all these professions that come in to our world and kind of become important parts of how we run our lives, it takes some time before you're accredited. Coaching in the global sphere is still not fixed. It's not taken care of under any regulations. The largest accrediting body for coaching in the world is called International Coaching Federation. It's a committee. They have hundreds of people applying for accreditation with them. It's very difficult to get your curriculum accredited. It's more easy to get accredited as a person doing coaching. Then it's about the hours that you do of paid coaching and all that. I won't get into that. But it's not regulated yet. So there are a lot of different things out there. Not everything that said coaching is cool stuff. Let me say some things that should be there when we do good coaching. I believe that the heart of the coach is that the person that is being coached is in charge of their own life. That must be the heart of coaching. The person that you are coaching is the one that is in charge of their own life. Another part of the heart of coaching is that, for us Christians, is that God is the God that initiates change. We are there to help the coachee come out with their dreams and their visions. The book of Proverbs says that, like deep waters are the thoughts in a man's heart, but those that bring them up are wise, or wisdom brings it up. In coaching, there is a belief that within every single person, there is something that has been locked down or is hidden or is in there somewhere. So it's just about time to see if you can get that stuff out of that person, to get that person on the wagon, to get them to the place where they are going. It's very important that we understand that the heart of coaching does not allow us to manipulate or instruct or ask questions that guides the person in a certain wrong direction. We need to make sure that it is a freeing thing. And our Christian ethics are really, really involved in this. And that's why I think it's so important with some roundtable discussions that have been done. in regards to coaching in Christian circles, some of the articles that have been written, because this is playing with fire if you don't do this well. We need to keep our hearts right in the art and science of coaching. Secondly, I want to say that all power to God and His sovereign calling. In the context that I'm in Norway, and in my church denomination, we tend to see calling as something that we are responsible for ourselves. So if you're called by God, then you need to prove that you can handle carrying it. So you might become the teenage leader, and then you become the youth pastor, and then if you survive that, you can become the associate pastor, and if you survive that, you might become the something. But what we're finding right now is that the whole stream from teenage leader to youth leader to senior pastor kind of breaks down in the recruitment level between youth pastor and senior pastor. People don't want the jobs. They would rather plant a new church, but we don't want to plant a new church if we don't see that the church planters before us succeeded. So our challenge at home is, what do we do with all these people that God has called? Are we going to leave them alone and see if they can kind of find their way? Because this meets individualism. This meets self-realization. If calling is realizing your own career, we have a challenge. Because that means that you need to fight for your own calling to be fulfilled. And who's going to help you then? So I say this as often as I can. Calling needs to be understood as something that is collective. If you have someone in your sphere, someone in your church that God has put His hand upon, make sure to get around them and feed those flames. Nurture that person. Help that person to understand that the reason why you have those dreams is because God has put something on you. Please come in to this relationship and we will see if we can help you in a direction. Create incubators so that the people that are called can get to the task that they are going to do. I try internally in my church to spot those people and find them and put a greenhouse over them to see that the calling comes up and becomes clearer and clearer to them. And what I find is that if I don't utilize the window of opportunity somewhere before they're 30 years old and getting them on a track of saying, I'm willing to live this kind of a lifestyle, then I lose them. I'm serious. I lose them to Statoil, a computer, a great salary, and spare time from 4 to 10 o'clock at night where they can run in the mountains or play soccer with their kids. It's possible to serve God and live a good life. But we need to make sure that people learn those skills of handling their life with their calling at a time where they are flexible enough to be able to do that. If we do that too late, people are not involved in church. We have lost so many called people. God doesn't regret His calling. We know that theologically. But poor people, they have to live with the fact that they should have lived another life than they live. Let's help them early, because God is the one that owns the calling. Thirdly, under the heart of coaching, I want to say that all responsibility is on the church planter. One of the major errors that we do in coaching is when we instruct and give suggestions to the one we coach. And then they go and apply what we suggested. And whose responsibility is it then when they fail? It's the one that gave the suggestion. So the art of asking questions in a way that gives the responsibility to the one that holds the responsibility is one of the key issues here. So that the coachee always remains the one with the responsibility. And there are so many technical things we can learn about this. But it really starts with the understanding and the respect that I, as the coach, I'm not the tutor here. I'm not the instructor, I'm not the teacher, I'm not the guru. I am only the coach, the one asking the question, because you are in the center. Two ears, one mouth. And most of preachers have a hard time doing this, but it can be learned. and it's a good thing. All right, thirdly, let's look at the different roles in the life of the church planter. Let's read. There are many roles and leaders that shape the life of the church planter. Coaching is not everything. Jeff Bailey and Steve Nicholson in the Vineyard churches, they say that there are very few ventures so demanding as planting a new church. It requires immense catalytic ability to start with nothing and gather new people into a vibrant and unique expression of the body of Christ, which impacts the community around it. It requires the church planter to be highly entrepreneurial, visionary, and effective communicator. It is an emotionally and spiritually demanding task. Having a coach can make the world of difference. Sometimes it is the key factor between success and failure. It means the coach must fulfill a lot of roles. Yes, the coach is very important. But the coach does not to, it's probably the most important role the first 3-4 years in the church plant. But you can limit it to that time. The entrepreneurial startup phase, the coach is very important. But please, coaching can be done for a church planter in Bucharest when you sit in Frankfurt. Do coaching on Skype on your computer. Do it on the telephone. Often coaching on telephone or during media is more helpful because you take away some of the body language and you're left with the factual words that are being said. And in coaching, that is an advantage sometimes. Coaching on the phone is a very good thing. Coaching is also about having a clear contract in the beginning before you start. For the next 3 years, I will take you from the idea of this church to where are we going and make a coaching contract. Not 11 pages, half a page maybe. Just write down, this is what we want to do. And help the coachee understand that now we are into a process together. I will walk you to your goal. Learning some basic coaching skills is not very difficult. For me, in my training, I have to say that just the teaching on how to listen well, what to listen for, how to ask different types of questions, like open question, closed questions, stuff like that. Some very simple grids like the GROW model, establish the goal, establish the reality, what are your opportunity and do you really want to do it? Very important. Very easy, and it's all out there. It's just to Google it. Another thing is, you know, get a handle on the SMART goals, you know, make it specific, measurable. All these are out there. Some simple tools in the toolbox of the coach. If you learn those, you've come a long way. But then practice on someone and have someone monitor it and do that a few times before you. In many ways, it's like learning to fly an airplane. It's not that difficult, but you need hours. Hours of training, because then you get more comfortable in doing. All right, I won't say more about that role. I'll talk about the other roles. The next role is the role of the trainer. And I find that in small denominations and in small countries and in the mission field, where people have limited resources, we tend to take all these roles into one person. That's when it all breaks down. That's also my own experience. Is that when we try to hold too many hats towards in the church planter's life, we confuse the church planter. The church planter needs more people to interact to make the thing happen because it's so intense. So coaching is one thing. It's about skill. The next one is about trainer, the trainer. Now, training can be done in classes, in seminaries. It can be done in modules like the M4 that Oyvind has developed. It's a brilliant concept because it's web-based and sometimes conference-based, but it's a process learning, the M4, and that is the trainer. The trainer is the teacher, the one that instructs and says, these are the things that you ought to do on your path towards church planting. I believe that is an important role. That role is also about skill. The third role is also about skill. That role is the role of the supervisor. Someone that keeps you accountable for the pathway. In my learning from all the big church planting movements in America that I've looked at over the last few years, and for my own sake, trying to figure this thing out, is that all of them are very clear that you need to show a pathway towards the church start or the plant. Most people will like this one and not this one because it's more organic. But if you show the church planter the path that they're going to, because there is a lot of mist and a lot of fog in church planting. There is a lot of crisis. There is a lot of, I don't know how to do this. But if the supervisor can come alongside, you are here now. 80% of success in work is just showing up at work. Come on, continue, and you'll hit this phase, and you'll hit this phase. All church planting movements that I see with respect for themselves, they have a clear pathway that the supervisor helps the church planter to look at when they lose track or don't know where they are. That role needs to be there. So the top three roles are skill-based roles. The role of the coach, the role of the trainer, and the role of the supervisor are all about the skills that you need to make it happen. The next three roles are about the inner development of the people that are going to plant the church. To find a mentor, someone that has done it before, someone that is a little bit of an expert. And I know that church planters for the last couple of generations, there are not that many. But to find an elderly leader, to find a minister that you look up to find a missionary that has gone the way before. What is the meaning of the word mentor? Loyal friend? Someone that would like you and would want you to succeed. You need that in addition to the other role. Fifthly, the role of the counselor. I say that if you take, like Frank DiMaggio has written a book called The Making of a Leader. It's a fantastic book. It's an old book, but it's a great, it's like a Bible. It's a big book. Because there are some things that seems that God weaves into the making of a leader. If you take that and you put it on top of the developments that happens in church planting, you'll see that church planting is a fast track to the making of a leader. One of the things that I see is that most of them learn rejection within the first 18 months. Is it one lesson that we learn in church planting? It's rejection. It's those people that come alongside for barbecue and they play with our kids and we're going to be with you forever and then suddenly they're gone. And how do you handle that emotionally? All those things can lead to some conflicts. One of the people, if it's a couple, the husband might handle it. The wife might get very disappointed or vice versa. It doesn't matter. The point is that sometimes you get into some conflicts. You get into some tough, rough waters where you would need to take a step aside and someone that are trained to deal with the heart issues and the counseling issues can help the church planter. Because when the supervisor gets impatient and the coach says, let's reach our goals, and the trainer says, well, it's just a phase, someone needs to say, let's talk about this. Let's deal with this issue that has happened in your life. Let's take a break. It's a yellow light right now. Your wife is not happy. Your husband is not happy. The kids are rebellious. The finances are not working. There's a crisis in your faith. Let the counselor deal with it. And lastly, which is also about the heart, the role of the encourager and the friend. When we planted our churches, we were about five guys that planted churches in different cities in our country about 9-10 years ago. And I have to tell you that traveling to another city, coming to a conference or to a coffee shop, sitting down with people that feels the burden, prays the prayers, and lives that kind of a life, it's fantastic to have friends in ministry. I'm sorry to say it, and I shouldn't say this from an egalitarian country like Norway, but my staff has no idea. My associates that I work closely with, they don't know all about the pressures and the things that you have to, in some way, not bleed downwards on people. You have to bleed sideways and upward. And it's so good to be with friends that have done the same thing. So I encourage all church planters to find someone in another city, in another denomination, someone that does the thing that you do, and hang out with them. And then you guys can come with your little church plants and say, we want to go somewhere. We can feed off each other and help each other succeed with this. Those are six roles developed by Dodd, I believe, about the roles in the church planter's life. Let me confirm that so that we cite this right. This was developed by James Dodd in Coaching Church Planters, Mission to North America. We have a few minutes left. I'll just talk a little bit about the various starting points for coaching. I won't get in depth in this, but we'll see how far we go into it. Some people that come to church planting come from a youth pastor role. Some come from a missionary role. Some come from senior pastor roles. Some come from the business life. So where people come from is very decisive for what type of coaching you ought to utilize in helping them. We can't be mean to people's intellect by saying the obvious. So it's very important that the coach, because of the style of it, that we are good at finding what type of coaching is needed for this particular person in this particular phase. And we need to change with the changes. We don't use the same type of coaching in the beginning as we do towards the end. And as you see here, we move from the bottom right corner from the telling or exhorting phase, which is the first or most primitive phase of coaching, where you tell people, this is how you write your goals. This is how the path will look. This is how you tell them, and you just instruct them very clearly on a basic level at how you ought to do things. So you're in many ways highly involved, assisting and involving with a person. The second one, which is the top right corner, is the selling one or the edifying one, where you're not so hands-on, but you're loose tight in a way. You review goals, you give feedback, you ask how the plans are doing, but you also help write some of the plans, and you remain open as to provide help during the time. In the third quadrant, the left top corner, we see the participating or enabling. Then you are even looser. You will ask how goal setting is going. You will ask about the different changes that are taking place in the journey. You will ask the coachee to make clearer decisions. And you'll listen and help solve problems, but that's also the limit to it. And then in the fourth one, which is the delegating, empowering one, it's obvious where we have come. We've come to a point where the coachee himself is in very, or herself, are in very much, they know what the game is about, they know where they're going, and you can be very loosely. You can call them once a month, and that's probably. So the point of this illustration is that when finding the way of engagement, you are able to move with the growth. It will be very mean to the intelligence of the coachee if we treat them like babies when they ought to be adults. And coaching can in many ways be a little too soft for some people. It's very easy to go wrong in the sense that you baby people. You can, if you do err in coaching, become the interrogator more than the encourager. So it needs some skills. On our last page, on page 4, we are looking at the important qualities of a church planting coach. As I said earlier, in the ideal coaching world, like Whitmore said, an expert coach would have a wealth of technical knowledge too. It is, however, very hard for experts to withhold their expertise sufficiently to coach well. If church planters are going to coach church planters, what is it that the church planter wants to tell the coachee? He wants to tell him when he does something wrong and when he does something right. It is very hard for the church planting coach to not become the instructor. That's why this is challenging. Because a coach should help the coachee fulfill his dream on an arm's length, kind of help her or him succeed with their dream. But because church planting is so rigorous, and because most church planters have done a lot of errors, you feel that you need to tell them, don't do this, this is stupid. And that is a difficulty. So maybe church planters are not the best church planting coaches. I'll leave that question open. But a coach is a reflective person. A coach is a person that is able to hear behind what he or her hears. A coach is a confrontational person at the same time as he is supportive. But you have to dare to confront and ask questions. Why do you say that? When you say it that way, it makes me feel like. Why do you use that word? That's strong language. How would you rephrase that? Would you use that word again? This is the second time you're late to our appointment. Why is that? Confrontative, but supportive. A coach is an analytic person that is able to move from the specific to the general, that draws out principles and tendencies in the life of the person talking and that is being coached. The church planting coach allows the church planter to fail. Failure is a major part of church planting. When Jesus compares the kingdom of God to something, he compares it to a farmer. He also compares it to the tree that is being planted. And what happens with the tree that grows up, it has lots of seed in it. And the more results we want, the more seed we need. So we need to fail a lot, fail forward, and make sure that we interpret the failures so that they are forward-lent and not detrimental for the ministry. The coach allows the church planter to be different. This is probably a challenge for many church denominations that have a clear-cut franchise way of doing church planting. But still it's good to let them be different. And a coach acknowledges his own need of pastoral care. As we close in a few minutes, I will say a few things about coaching as a part of a pathway towards success. The demand of the task of a church planting can cause the church planter to lose sight of the pathway. Church planting movements have all seen high success rate when they have supplied the candidates for church planting with a clear pathway to follow, as we said here earlier. However, we need to keep it in sight of the church planter. We need to use it during the process and not just leave it on the website. That's an error that we see happen. Lots of good things are on the website or in a shelf in the office. But bring it to the conversation. The tools that the coach needs or the supervisor needs or the trainer needs should be visible. It should be put on the table consistently during the whole process to remind the person where we are going and what we're doing. I could say a lot more about those pathways, but my time is up. So I will stop there and ask how we will continue on this talk. Thank you for your attention.